Santana liked to sit outside as much as possible now. Soon snow and bitter cold would force him indoors for months at a time, something he had never grown used to since leaving his home in Manizales, where the temperature averaged 65 degrees year-round. The scent of pine lingered in the breeze. The dark gray sheet covering the sky for most of the day had torn away, leaving strips of ragged purple clouds staining the pink horizon. He closed his eyes and focused his thoughts once more, searching for a loose end that he might use to unravel the complexities of the current case. Difficult cases were nothing new. Experience had taught him to keep an open mind, despite the caged demon thrashing inside him, demanding justice. He needed to control the demon, control his growing feelings of anger and vengeance. Setting the demon free would shut down his thinking process and encourage him to make rushed judgments, to cut corners, to cross the line. Santana had known cops, good cops, who were now doing time with the same perps they had once put behind bars. He believed the line had to be drawn between right and wrong. He had straddled it on occasion, but in his mind he had crossed it only once, and that was long before he carried a badge. Yatana began whining softly, and Santana opened his eyes and peered down at her. She was sitting on her haunches now, gazing intently at the river as though she had located a downed duck in the water. "What is it, girl?" Quietly, she stood on all four legs, her eyes still fixed on something only she could see. She took one tentative step toward the railing along the edge of the deck. Then she gave a short whine and stopped. As Santana leaned over to pat the soft, dense fur on her back, he felt something blow past the space just occupied by his head. The sliding door behind him exploded, sending jagged fragments of glass hurtling like shrapnel through the air. He dived toward the deck floor, grabbing Yatana by the collar and pulled her down with him. His heart was jacked up and pumping adrenaline through his system. He could see little in the twilight beyond the trees, but he knew from the sound that the bullet had been fired from a high-powered rifle, that he and the dog were vulnerable lying uncovered on the deck. His eyes kept searching the woods as he reached into his open briefcase and wrapped his right hand around the Glock. Santana had two ways to go, forward or back, attack or run. It had been that way for more than half his life. "It's all right," he whispered to Yatana. "Stay." He crawled toward the deck's edge, grabbed a post with his free hand, swung his legs under the rail, and dropped over the side and into the gathering darkness.
You've been listening to Christopher Vallon reading from his new mystery novel, The Black Minute. He is also the author of White Tombs, featuring Hispanic detective John Santana, which won the Reader Views Choice Award for Best Mystery and the Garcia Award for Best Fiction. He currently resides in Minnesota with his wife, Christopher Vallon. Welcome to Right on Radio.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here.
And you just told me outside that the Black Minute was nominated for, it's a finalist for the Midwest Book Awards, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. There are three finalists. The awards will be May 12th at the Humanities Center in St. Paul.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Great. Well, tell us a little about the Black Minute. Just give us a general idea without giving away too much what the story's about.
Well, it concerns the murder of a young Hmong girl who's found on Harriet Island in St. Paul, and Santana begins the investigation. And as often happens in detective novels, what seems pretty cut and dried evolves into something much more complex and leads him in a lot of different directions. And the murder, like I say, deals with the Hmong community, which I thought was interesting to explore and the whole research, given that St. Paul is one of the largest has one of the largest Hmong populations in the country.
Well, in the world, really.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we're number two behind
Fresno, California, which is also actually the partner he works with in the book, Diana Lee, is from Fresno, California.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yeah, interesting. Well, tell us a little bit about how you came to settle on a Hispanic detective and tell us a little about John Santana.
My wife is from Colombia, and I've traveled there a number of times, and she knew I was interested in writing a detective novel, and she encouraged me to say, why don't you write something about a Colombian detective who's here in Minnesota? And I thought I could really bring a different take to some of the detective series that are in the Twin Cities. And Colombia is a very beautiful and unique country, but historically it's had a history of violence and, of course, the drugs and that sort of thing. And so Santana's whole backstory really takes place, and why he in Colombia, and why he had to leave at the age of 16, came here, lived with a family who's a guy named Phil O'Toole, who was a homicide detective in St. Paul, and that's how he eventually became a homicide detective. So I credit my wife, Martha, with a lot of the inspiration, and she's also a great fact checker and gives me a lot of background for the Hispanic community.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of unusual. We don't have too many Hispanic detectives in in stories, and certainly not set in Minnesota.
Exactly.
You delve pretty heavily into the Hmong in this book, and in the last book, White Tombs, you delve pretty heavily into the Hispanic community. Mm-hmm. Talk about, you know, what you have to do research-wise and so forth to get that deeply into these two cultures.
When I was, in a former life, I was a teacher and a principal at an elementary school, and we had a Hmong population in the school, and I became real fascinated with the culture and how they came here from Laos, how they... a lot of people may not be familiar how they helped us in Vietnam. And after the war, of course, they were hunted down by the Viet Cong, and many of them ended up in Thai refugee camps and then eventually came here, as we mentioned earlier, to Fresno and St. Paul and primarily in the upper Midwest. And so I wanted to explore that culture and that backstory. And so I spent an awful lot of time interviewing people from the Hmong community, people I knew, who both my wife and I had worked with. There's a scene with a Hmong funeral in the book, and so I talked to a mortician that gave me some real insight into how those Hmong funerals are conducted, because they usually last for about 3 days, unlike our funeral. And so I wanted to get that correct. And he gave me some very good information as far as that goes. Also, Paul Zhang, who works in the St. Paul school system, was really helpful. He read some of those parts that I wrote and helped correct some of the mistakes I had made.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much violence associated with a mystery story anyway, but, of course, you're adding in the layer of putting immigration, whether it be the Hispanic community in the first book or the Hmong community in the second book. Was that deliberate that you were weaving those together, or was that just sort of the nature of the fact that you're exploring those two cultures?
In White Tombs, the original idea came from a visa scam that I read about that actually happened in New Jersey. And since immigration is obviously an issue that's being dealt with in the country, I thought that I could use that as one of the themes in the book. And so I explored that whole piece of immigration and visas, and my wife, having come here when she was in her 20s, was very familiar with that as well. So that was very helpful. And then working again with the Hmong and exploring that whole cultural issue and the theme of social issues, but also themes of universal themes such as good and evil, conflict, violence, and redemption, I think, is a big theme in both books. So I look for something that's, you know, in some ways a little unique within the culture and within our society, and something that's current, that's happening, and then try to tie in those universal themes as well.
Mm. Good. This is essentially a police procedural. Mm-hmm. So I know you did a lot of research with the St. Paul Police Department and so forth. Talk a little about that.
Exactly. I went through, since I don't live in St. Paul, I couldn't go through their academy, but I went through the Ramsey County Citizens Academy. It's a 9-week academy where you can ride with the Ramsey County deputies. I shot the Glocks. Also, I did meet through one of the St. Paul cops my wife knew, Bill Krause. Introduced me to the homicide detectives in St. Paul. I met some forensic people like Lane Lodmel and some of those people down there who have been really very helpful in the novel, because, as you mentioned, it is a police procedural. So I want to, within the confines of fiction, you want to get it as accurate as possible. So whenever I have questions, I can email or call them. The third novel, which I just finished, I had a question. Santana has to get some information off a computer. And I got a hold of Greg McDonald, who was the computer forensic analyst down for the, at the St. Paul PD, and I, he invited me down and spent a couple hours with him one morning. He showed me how they download information off the computer, how they get it off your cell phone. So when I write that scene, I can bring a realism to the novel that, having not gone through that, I wouldn't be able to do. So they've been really, really helpful.
Yeah, good.
And they're reading the books.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This is a very regional work too. Both of your books are setting them in St. Paul and its environs. Talk about that. Did you, for example, find areas of the Twin Cities that you hadn't really known much about while you were setting it here, or did you just kind of stick with areas that you knew? How did you go about setting it where you did?
That's a good question. Actually, when I was in grad school at St. Thomas, I lived in along Summit Avenue in St. Paul, so I lived in St. Paul for a few years and got familiar with it, but you're right. I mean, it's changed a lot, and so there were a lot of areas where I had to explore on my own. Because I use a lot of real places within the books. For example, in The Black Minute, there's a couple scenes at 3M. And again, I had some contacts there. Dick Streeper, who's a retired 3M exec, invited me over to 3M. So I was able to go into the labs, talk to people. I met a man who knew John Johnstone, who helped the FBI develop the database for duct tape. And there's a scene where I needed some information on duct tape. So I got his email. He lives out east in, I think, Virginia now. And I emailed him, told him I needed some information. He sent me all of this information on duct tape, the different types and so on. So, again, those kind of contacts are really great. Yeah. And just going to these places and using the names of the restaurants or whatever where Santana goes.
Right.
But I still think it's the themes are broad enough, so even though it's locally based, the audience, I think, is much larger than that. In fact, I was just in Rochester at a book signing the other day, and I sold White Tombs and copies of White Tombs and The Black Minute to a woman in New Zealand. Wow. So I think those are my first two copies that are going that far. But
Yeah, and I didn't realize there were so many different kinds of duct tape till I read the book. I used to sell duct tape when I worked at Menards years ago, and I didn't know that.
No, and that was something I learned as well. So it was, and I enjoyed doing the research. That's part of this. I think that. It brings a realism, like I say, but I also like doing that. And I like to read that in a novel. It tells me that the author has done some background and done some work on it. There's nothing worse than get an email and someone said, oh, you know, this is wrong or you didn't get this right. So it happens, but you try to get it as accurate as possible.
Yeah. Well, and there are a number of local mystery writers that, you know, work here, Sanford and Housewright and Teresa Persons. And I'm curious if you read them, if you take anything that they write into account in terms of, say, oh, they set their novel here, so I want to either do something different than that, or I want to at least be aware of it when I'm working, or do you just kind of write your own book and not worry too much about that sort of thing?
Yeah, I pretty much write my own book and try to bring my own style to it. I've read some of those authors and others as well. But again, you try to bring your own unique perspective, whether it's Santana as a character or the murders themselves and how they evolve and how Santana solves them. You know, I try to be as unique as possible, with knowing that, of course, a lot of people are writing them. And many, the Twin Cities are, you know, have a lot of crime writers and a lot of people doing that. So I want to try to do a little different take on the traditional detective novel.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed some differences between your first book and your second book, even with respect to description of place or setting, such that it seemed like I was being pulled in a little more in the second book than I was in the first book. Excuse me. And I'm wondering, was that, again, a deliberate strategy or not necessarily strategy, but a deliberate technique on your part to try to be more region-oriented, or was that just sort of an accident of the writing?
Well, I don't know if it was a conscious attempt to do it, but I think I did use more real places in the second book than I did in the first. And also, White Tombs, Part of the book takes place, as you know, in Mexico, and then it's Santana's whole backstory that takes place in Colombia. So, you know, it has a little bit larger focus than the Black Minute, which basically takes place in Twin Cities, Lake Elmo, and St. Paul primarily. So, like I say, I don't know that that was necessarily conscious, but sometimes authors, I think, are a little hesitant to use real places, and I kind of debate that and talk to my publisher about that, because you don't want to, you know, put them in a negative light or that sort of thing. So whenever he goes someplace, I try to make it as, you know, sort of positive as possible. And not every place is obviously real in the book. But I had a guy email me recently. He said, you know, I read both books. I really like them. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out where Santana lives, because he has a place, you know, in the books, he has a place along the river, the St. Croix River, just on the border between Wisconsin and St. Paul. And I said, you know, that really is not a real place there where he lives, because he was naming all these real places. Oh. Go, but he couldn't quite figure out where Santana's house was. And I said, well, you know, that's fictional.
One made up area.
That is one made up area. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and one thing I found intriguing was that your main character, Santana, has a belief in the supernatural, and he's also a fairly flawed character in a lot of ways, too, which makes him interesting. But I'm more concerned, I guess, with the supernatural. Talk about including that element. So here's a homicide detective whose job is to look at evidence and science and forensic such, and yet he has this sort of supernatural element working in his mind at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's very Colombian, actually, even though Colombia is basically 98% Catholic. They are a very superstitious culture and by nature. And Santana brings some of that. He's a big believer in his dreams. And there are a number of dream sequences in both books where he keeps a dream journal. He writes down things. He relies a lot on his intuition. And so I bring that piece to both books. And I think, from what I know of the detectives and talk to, I mean, you're right. A lot of it is forensics, not as much as we see on television, of course.
Right.
It's mostly hard work by the detective. But I think it's also a, sort of a gut feeling. They've interviewed so many, you know, perpetrators and victims that they get a sense of whether someone's telling the truth, that they're not telling the truth. Santana's also a big believer in body language. He reads body language. He's taken courses on it, so he looks at their facial expressions, what they say verbally, and that sort of thing, and all of that helps him decide whether somebody's telling the truth, whether they're lying to him, or whatnot. So, and I really like that element about. In fact, I've done that before. I've kept dream journals myself, and just sort of analyze dreams and see what they mean, and the metaphors that you see within the dreams.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the writing and publishing process. The first book you self-published,
yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second book you're with North Star Press.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the differences between those two ways of doing it. And has the second one, I assume, been easier than the first one because you've got somebody else behind you and doing some of the stuff for you?
Exactly. I think the big issue is distribution. It's much harder to get distribution from a self-published book than it is from a traditional, whether it's a small publisher or a larger publisher. So distribution is key. I mean, so much is done on the internet now with Amazon and even through Barnes & Noble and that other retailers. But still, people like to go into bookstores, and so you want to get your book into the stores as much as possible. I've been fortunate, as you mentioned earlier, that I've won some awards and gotten some good reviews, so that has helped the sale of both books.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest thing with the second book is the distribution. The process basically is the same: writing, getting somebody to edit it, a cover designer, all of that kind of a thing. But I had to do much more of that on my own for White Tombs. It was really kind of funny because the cover of the book has a tomb on it. And both books, by the way, the titles have meanings. White Tombs is actually from a passage in Matthew about people who are white on the outside but dark and decaying like a grave on the inside. And the Black Minute is from a poem by Robert Browning about death. But when the cover designer, who was in Arizona, did White Tombs, the book takes place during the winter. And when he sent a couple of designs to me to look at, he had no snow and there were leaves on the trees. So I had to email him back and say, you know what, you got to take those leaves out and you got to put some snow in because it's a winter book. So so you have to do that much more, you know, be much more involved in all of that process when you're self-publishing versus when you have a publisher that pretty much takes care of that.
And talk about the Reader Views Award, because a lot of our listeners probably don't know what that is, and the Garcia Award, too, for that matter.
Well, Reader Views is a national organization based in Austin, Texas, and every year they look at books from small presses and self-published books and independent publishers, and they the reviewers that have reviewed the books decide which books that they think merit awards, and they narrow it down to three or four books in a number of different categories, similar to the Minnesota Book Awards or Midwest Book Awards, and then they sit down and decide to award the first place and so on. So I've been fortunate that both books have won the Reader Reviews Choice Awards, and the Garcia Award is a specialized award that they give for for best fiction of the year, and I won that.
So. Is that a Hispanic related thing?
Yeah.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the writing process that you use. Do you use an outline? Do you structure it in advance? Do you kind of know where you're going, or do you just sort of plunge in with a scene and a character and go from there?
Well, I sort of plunged in with the first book. I knew the ending and the last scene before I began writing it, and But I just started and tried to get to that spot, and I ended up, you know, sort of writing myself into a couple corners. With the second book, I did a rough outline, about a 12 to 15 page outline, and actually with the third book, I did the same thing as well, and that helped me, give me a direction. But I think you can't make, and at least I believe you can't get it really too structured, because you got to leave your mind open for creativity, and many of the things that occurred in the second book were not on the outline, including characters that just appeared and so on. But it gives me a direction. I also try to take Hemingway's advice, which is, I write a few hours a day. I try to get 500 to 1,000 words a day. Some days go quicker than others. But Hemingway said, always leave something in the well. Mm. So
yes.
I sort of don't write yourself out.
All right.
So I try to follow that and end with a spot where I'm going to start the next day and then go back and review what I've written and then move forward from there.
Right.
So, but I think it's discipline. Basically, it's just putting yourself in the seat every day in front of the computer and writing. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And revision wise, do you do multiple revisions? Do you sort of, as you said, you mentioned you go back and look at what you did the day before you move on. But do you do additional revisions beyond that? Or?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I also belong to a group of writers in the Twin Cities, and we've been together for a number of years, and they're invaluable because we meet once or twice a month and read each other's work, and they're great because they'll pick up things and give me suggestions. And so I really couldn't, I wouldn't be in the spot I am today without the writers group.
All right. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, but it's been great chatting with you. I'm Steve McElstrom. I've been chatting with Christopher Vallon about his new mystery novel, The Black Minute. Christopher Vallon, thanks very much for being on Write On Radio.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
And now this.